the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Do you ever find yourself wondering where you would be or what your life would be like if certain things had or had not happened? I do. I wonder that all the time. But I know that I wouldn't have what I do have if things hadn't happened exactly the way that they did along the way, especially those life-changing events. The course of my personal life was definitely changed with the adoption of my pit bull Great Dane, Dublin. Some of you may have heard me talk about her on this podcast or seen her in our TV documentary series. And it was because of Dublin that I was led to a town named Dublin in Georgia, where I met and eventually adopted out our beautiful brindle pit bull mix, Huckleberry. And if it wasn't for Huckleberry, I may never have met the lovely lady I'm about to have a conversation with, the founder of Deep South Canine Rescue. Deep South Canine Rescue is a licensed nonprofit volunteer organization located in Ellaville, Georgia. That is about 2 hours southwest of Atlanta, Georgia. Ellaville is a very small town in Schley County, and they too battle with the daily onslaught of homeless dogs found abandoned and neglected on the sides of the road, roaming the neighborhoods, or simply left behind on properties when people move. The citizens of this county who do care and who do love their animals would also like to see this abandonment end. They are the ones who are in support of this small town rescue's efforts. But the problem isn't getting any smaller. So to tell us more about it and see how you can help Deep South Canine Rescue, let's have a conversation with Pam Dixon. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Pam.
Hey, Jackie. How you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for joining me for this conversation. As I have told my listeners, it was sort of kismet, you know, the whole introduction to you and how you helped foster Huckleberry and your rescue allowed me to have that experience of adopting my first Georgia dog. So let's start with you telling our listeners who, you know, may not be familiar with Deep South Canine Rescue, why you became a licensed dog rescue. What drove you to begin the rescue process?
Me and my daughter, we were kind of riding around one day, and it's a broke leg dog. And we followed this dog and could never find her, couldn't catch her. But they told us that there was a dog pound that we didn't know that was there. So we got a hold of Mr. Benny and found out that there was a dog pound. So we started helping him. He was an older guy, and he was doing his best. And so we found out that's where she was. And we just started helping the city dog catcher, I guess you could say, manage the dogs and maybe try to find them a way to get out.
Okay. So when you say dog pound, it's not like a municipal city shelter or like a huge shelter like we envision sometimes in the cities, right? Is it, it's more of a smaller place?
It's more like a, down in the country. It used to be like a landfill, and they got a little building down there, and it holds like four dogs at a time. And so we just went down there and we're trying to did some upkeep and kind of made it look a little bit more homier. And we just started spending time helping him with the dogs that he would bring in.
Okay. And where do these dogs come from? Why does your area in Georgia have so many dogs needing homes?
I think it's due to the lack of spay and neuter. You got a lot of backyard breeders, and they don't understand that when you breed dogs and you don't properly take care of your dogs and you don't get them good homes, then those dogs create more dogs. And then finally you got your streets full of dogs and they're hungry and scared and, you know, deprived of what a dog should have as a companion in the home.
Right. And there are veterinary clinics, even though it's a small town. Are there a good number of them that could provide the services? Are people just not able to get to these clinics, or they just don't know about spay and neuter?
Yes, there's plenty of clinics here. We have three within a 30-mile radius of us. Most people don't care. You got people that do right, but Most people just don't take it on. They don't take ownership and spaying and neutering. And, you know, as long as they don't have to take care of the dogs, they don't care. That's kind of how I see it.
Okay. So you must have people that have a lot of accidental litters.
A lot of backyard breeders, a lot of people have their dogs tethered to trees, and they'll call and say, well, one got loose and we got an accident litter here, and they just don't care. They let their dogs roam and run, and they'll go breed the other dogs down the street. And people just don't take ownership in taking care of their animals. They're like livestock. You know, they're just on the streets, and if they pet them when they go by, but most of the time they're just running around wild, you know?
Okay. So it's just a different culture. I'm just trying to maybe understand, maybe this part of the country just has a different relationship. Some people, not everybody though, right? Because you have all these loving homes. And, you know, when I met you, you have your own personal dogs. All your family members have dogs and they're family members.
I don't really understand it. They just think having a dog is cool, but they don't understand that when you have a dog, that dog has needs and it has feelings, and it needs to be loved and it wants to be loved. And no matter what you do to it, it's going to stay there. So they think if the dog's just hanging out and it don't go nowhere, that it's getting all it needs. But it's actually, no matter how bad you treat it, it's not going to go nowhere, you know?
Right.
So I think it's more or less maybe culture, I guess. You know, you got a lot of people that just do not do right by their animals.
Right. And I mean, look, we did domesticate dogs. So it is our responsibility as humans to look after them. They don't call them man's best friend for nothing. That phrase, you know, goes back a long ways. And I call them human's best friend because they are. So it would be nice to advocate for some more help and maybe some more information to pass out to people, more support to give to people in your area and your county. You are a foster-based rescue, right? So how does that help when you take in the homeless dogs of your area? What does it mean to be a foster-based rescue for you? What do fosters have to do in order to help your rescue out?
Yes, we are a foster base. When we bring in a dog, from experience, when we get them in, if they're emaciated or if they need vetting, we start there first. We just kind of look at what we got and we just start loving it. And then we get it to the vet and then we think about its future and we start with the basic training, because we set these dogs up for success because they've already been let down. And so we show them love and compassion. We vet them, we get them feeling better. And then, like I said, we train them and then we set them up for success. And then we ask fosters if we can get them. It's hard to get them because a lot of people just don't have time or just won't take the time. We help them set the dogs up for success.
And what is the commitment of a foster? If I lived in your county, or if I was, you know, a neighbor of yours and wanted to foster for you, what would you ask of me if I took on a dog?
If you took on a dog for me, I would just ask you to love it, care for it. We would provide the food. We would provide the vetting. If you couldn't get it to the vet, we would even, you know, get somebody to come and take it to it. But you would just be responsible to love that dog and show him that you're not going to ever let it down. Wherever it goes from here on, it's going to be in a home and it will be loved and taken care of.
And what's the minimum amount of time? Like, say I couldn't commit for too long, or how much time do you need a foster family to commit and have the dog in their home?
From start to finish, I'd say a month. Because between the vetting, if it's a dog that doesn't have any complications or any problems, but if it's just the basic, somebody done dumped it on the streets and it just needs the vetting, the spay and the neuter, start to finish, a good dog, a month.
Okay. And then, of course, you have the special cases. And I know you have a gift for training. Look, when I saw Huckleberry in that shelter in Dublin, and for my listeners who don't know, Pam's daughter saw a post when I first advocated for help to get this dog out of this shelter in Dublin. And Pam's daughter tagged Pam, and Pam wrote on the message, I didn't know who they were. And they said, we'll foster. And the shelter had said to me that because I was from out of state, I couldn't adopt the dog. But if I got a rescue to pull the dog, then I could adopt the dog from them. So that's the direction I went. And you socialized Huckleberry in a way I hadn't seen before I hadn't been exposed to this world or the world of rescue. I hadn't been to Georgia. But when I met you, I saw Huckleberry and he got along with every dog, large, small, older, younger. I felt very comfortable bringing him to my home and I already had Dublin and two pugs. So how does that come into your life? How did you know I have this gift to help dogs become well socialized and go into a home?
Well, when we first started, I didn't really realize I had the gift. I don't think I had a gift. I have to give a lot of credit to Grace Canine. Brittany taught me a lot.
Oh, yes. Grace Canine Academy. Brittany Gray has been on my podcast.
She's great. We love her. She really stands behind us and she supports us when she can and however, you know, every how she can. To start off with, I really didn't know what I was doing. Huckleberry was probably the first one I was worried about because he was going to get adopted and I wasn't going to be sending him to another rescue. So I just rode around with him and it's just spent time with him. And it didn't take much at all. It just took the love. I mean, we'd get in the car and we'd sing Dolly Parton, you know, or something like that. And he would just lick me in the face and we just love each other. And I'd say, stay and wait. And he just learned it all. So it just naturally came to me that, you know, maybe I can be an advocate for these dogs. I can show people that it don't take the smartest person in the world to be able to teach a dog to listen and learn and love you.
Right. It just takes time, dedication, right?
Mm-hmm. That's it. It's just everyday. It's like getting up, taking a shower, putting your clothes on and eating your breakfast and going to work and coming back. It's just you get up and you put that dog in that routine and he does everything you do, you know. And when it's time for you to go to work, he goes in his crate or he goes in his special place that you have in the house for him. And he waits for you to come home because he's being well loved and taken care of. And he's going to want to please you if you're treating him good and teaching him.
Right, right. That makes sense. And you'd speak of doing the vetting first when you save a dog. And even, you know, with Huckleberry, he was heartworm positive at the time. So I remember doing a fundraiser and, you know, raising funds to try and get his treatment taken care of because I couldn't bring him with heartworm to California. But how does your rescue get the bills paid?
Well, we just advocate for the dog. We will set up fundraisers and we'll tell them about the dog. We show them, you know, what's wrong with it. And we just ask people, it's going to take X amount of dollars to vet this dog. Can you help him, you know, cross over into a healthy life so that he can get adopted and shine in his future? We've got some good donors. We've got some good followers and we really appreciate all of them. But without them, we couldn't do it.
And you adopt your dogs out. I know just from having adopted out of state, you adopt dogs a lot out of state. They're not necessarily local adoptions, right?
Right.
How does that work?
Well, through the years, as we've grown, we used to just send them up to another rescue that was up north. And this lady was really nice and she helped us like push dogs. But then we got 501c. We had a few volunteers that had adopted dogs from her. Justina Hill, she adopted Monty and she loved him and said she wanted to be a part of the team. So her and a few more ladies that adopted, they started building Instagrams and Facebooks and websites, something I didn't know how to do. All I knew how to do was get these dogs up and love them and vet them. And so with their help, we was able to create adoption sites and where people could come and look. And then like Jody Dove, she advocated for us a lot. And she's got a lot of nice friends that have joined and support us. So with all these people coming together, it makes it a lot easier for them to get funds and to raise funds for us. And so up north is what a lot of them kind of jump in and want to come in and help and do and adopt from us. I mean, from one dog to the next, you know, people realize you're adopting out really good dogs. You know, they're exactly what you say they are. And if it's not, then you do your best to fix that part of that dog so that it can have a successful adoption.
Since I've now been familiar with you and the process that I've seen you go through and I follow you online, I know that you don't discriminate against breed, temperament, age, or medical condition when a dog is in need. So you've also taken on difficult cases. So you're the main foster for the difficult cases, right?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that process. What is considered a difficult case and do those dogs get homes?
Most dogs, when we get here, that we do pull in here are heartworm positive. And so that takes a process. So it takes up to 30 days to get them through that. But they heal up and they do fine with that. You've got some cases where, you know, a foot's in a trap. We've had one dog. We've had a couple of dogs. We have to amputate the legs and stuff like that. So those dogs there, it takes a little bit longer just to get them over the hump of the vetting part of it and healed up. But then you take in cases sometimes where they may not be really nice, or they've been abused, and they'll react to things, and they don't quite know how to trust somebody. So those dogs right there, they take a little bit longer. I have to sometimes pull in special people that know how to handle these situations, but we don't give up on them. We work with them, we socialize them, we take them places, we get them out there so that they can experience people walking up to them or dogs coming up to them. And we help them to overcome the abuse that might have caused them to be like they are. So it takes a little longer to do those, but we don't give up on them. We make sure that they get a home. And if we can't fix it, then we find somebody that can.
And I recently saw a post, and you know what? I'm actually going to pull it up on my phone, because I, as you're talking about these special cases and you know, dogs with special medical needs that take a little bit more time, I want to read a post that Deep South Canine Rescue put on their site and ask you about this dog, Pam, Rosebud.
Yes, yes.
Let me read it real quick so our listeners have a point of reference. But it says, there's a picture of her on your Facebook, and it says, "We have named this baby Rosebud. On New Year's Eve 2021 at 6:30 p.m., I got a call about an abandoned dog in need. A lady found a dog, now named Rosebud, in her yard. She contacted our local police, who found out that this dog's owner left her behind and moved off with her boyfriend and said they could not afford the hurt baby. She verbally surrendered her to Deep South Canine Rescue. On intake, we started pain medication, antibiotics, and we met with the vet tech the next day to get her all cleaned up. And just so that listeners know, when they see the post, she did have a big gash on her hip. Or what were her injuries, Pam?
When she got here, she had a real bad gash on her hip area, and it was split up pretty good. And so we thought that was all that was there, which was pretty, it was pretty bad. And she was just very fragile and thin. So when we got to the vet tech the next day and got her in, she immediately, I told her, I said, you know, she won't let me open her mouth. And I said, she's not eating real good. And so she opened her mouth. And when she did, it was just very, it was heart-wrenching. Her gum was separated from the roof of her mouth. And it was either, and I don't know whether she got hit by a car or if somebody hit her with a club, but her teeth were everywhere. They were in the sides of her jaws. And it was just, it was painful. It was really horrible. And we fixed that, you know, but it was bad. I mean, she couldn't eat. And she had been running around like this for a while. And she drug herself over to this lady's house. And this lady was just like, oh my God, I got to help her. And when she called me at first, I was just like, you know, I'm full. I don't have anywhere to put her. And she says, Pam, you got to look at this. And I said, can you foster? And she said, she's got to see a vet. And so I told her, I said, you know, get her over here. We got 15 minutes to get her in the building.
That's right. Cause it was New Year's Eve.
It was New Year's Eve. My husband had went to get dinner, cause you know, I get to stay home with my rescue dogs. So he was going to get dinner. So I was going to try to slip her in and just see about her. And when she got here, we got her in. But when I seen her mouth, I mean, it scared me. It was, I said, she either got hit by a club or a car. But she said that she called the authorities, and they came out and they knew the dog. They knew who she belonged to. And she said she just couldn't afford her. Just like you said, she couldn't afford her. And she just left her. She left her and another dog behind. And this Rosebud is probably 6 months old. And as she has a brother, we did pull it in also.
Oh, wow. Really?
And there was a cat. Yeah. She's just a baby. I mean, she's just a sweetheart. Gosh, she's precious. And to be put through everything she's been through. I mean, I can imagine her hungry, trying to go in the area. It was a very rural area, but I can imagine her being hungry and just scavenging around because they're thin, and they shooing her off. And when she wouldn't go because she's so sweet, I can picture somebody hitting her or either rushing her out in the highway somewhere and she accidentally got hit by a car. I don't really know, but
okay.
She was left behind. They just moved off and just left her.
Okay. And I saw on the post that she's already had her surgery. I mean, you didn't even have time for a fundraiser. It said, right? You have to just jump into action, even if you don't have the funds.
Yes. Yes. We just had the vet. Thank God for Dr. Crawford. He stepped in immediately and he let us charge it until we could get the funds in to pay for.
Okay. And for our listeners, if you don't know, and at the end of this episode, you can scroll to the show notes and the links that Pam will give us. But if you want to help Rosebud and see the post, there are some fundraisers up there that I saw. And I know it's going to take a lot more money than is there already. But hey, a little bit at least helps start that and get those vet bills paid for Rosebud. She's very cute. I saw that you were hugging her in one. I mean, she seems like a very lovable puppy.
Well, here at the rescue, I kind of have different kind of dogs. You got some dogs that are leash dogs, and you got some that are trustees is what I call them. And the trustees get to run loose and hang out because they don't go nowhere. They've just been so abused or so let down that when you give them the little bit of love you give them, they just hang out. So Rosebud is a trustee. She gets to run with everybody. And when I'm leash walking everybody, she's just jumping around, just playing and enjoying life because she's not hurting and she's not hungry anymore. All she wants is just to be looked at pretty much. I mean, if you look at her, she'll just melt in your arms.
Oh my goodness. She's so sweet. Already a trustee. And this was just a few weeks ago, right? Are you planning to adopt her out? Is she going to be available for adoption?
Yes, she is. And she's going to be a great dog. I mean, she is so respectful and so willing to please at this point that it's crazy. I mean, when I looked at her mouth, I'm thought, oh my gosh, you know.
Right. I can't help but ask this because, of course, you know, my mind goes there. And why are people who have pets allowed to neglect or abuse their pets and just walk away without any accountability? I mean, in this case, the authorities knew and Rosebud was clearly suffering and these people got to just leave and say, you guys can have her.
The laws just don't protect our animals. They don't. And that's the saddest part of it all, you know. They just, I mean, they're better here now. They get behind me a whole lot more than they used to. And they're understanding where I'm coming from. But just, I mean, the law is the law. And if there's not a law in place to protect it, there's nothing they can do, you know?
Yeah, good point, actually. Because if the law is not there, you're right. What can the police do then?
They yeah, can't just I mean, they done, he done all he could do. He knew me. He knew what I done. He yeah. reached out and he told her, he said, you call this number right here. He said, this lady will help this dog. I know she will. But he knew I couldn't do it without owner surrender. So he verbally got one so that we could take ownership and immediately start the process with her.
Yeah. I mean, look, to me from this end, it looks like cruelty and should be punishable by law. However, depends on where we are. And in this country, you know, they're not federal laws. They go sometimes county to county, not even state to state. So it would be nice if people out there care or want to make changes, if more people came together, I suppose, to make some changes in these laws, you know, to maybe impose, I don't know, fines to, there has to be some accountability. You can't just treat living sentient beings this way and walk away and leave it to you or to anyone in the county just because they have what, a bigger heart? That just seems, it just doesn't compute in my brain. I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, there was two little boys that got to watch this happen and they had to walk away from their pets that were given to them just a few months back. So, I mean, what did you teach these kids? It's okay to leave a damaged dog behind. It's okay to just walk away and leave your dogs. So that right there feeds into our future.
You're right. What are we teaching the current generation, you know, the generation that's going to take care of us or, you know, build our world when we're old. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you're right. You're right. And tell me, do you have any dogs now that are difficult cases to adopt out? I mean, are there some that you feel present more of a long-term stay with you versus the ones that are easier or the puppies that get adopted out faster?
Yeah, we have one that we've brought back from upstate. She's 6 years old now. She got adopted 3 years ago. Her name is Milana, and she is a beautiful little pocket pity, jet black. She has a beautiful eagle on her chest, and she's a special girl. She's sweet, but she's learned through her adoption that she has to take care of herself. She was in a home with other dogs, and they were allowed to, I guess, pick on her. They would I don't, whatever they done, when I took her to the vet said that he thought that other dogs had bitten on her a little bit. So I'm thinking since it was smaller dogs, we got the little dog syndrome. They kind of picked on her and she would get in trouble because she's the big dog in the crowd, you know. So we took her back and we brought her home And now that I've got her here, she's a special girl. She is. Oh. She looks at my pack and she's very, very protective of herself because she don't know what nobody's going to do to her as far as dogs. So she will react. She hasn't reacted with me, but it's because I've kept her safe. When I first brought her in, I put her in a crate and then I put this fence around her and the dogs were allowed to come to the fence and she would look at them and she knew they couldn't get to her. So she felt safer. Right. So now she's been here. I brought her in December 2021 and she's only been here for a little while. And the love that I've shown her and the protection that I've shown her, now I'm not scared to get her out of the crate and walk through my house, and I have three small dogs, but she knows that I've got her back. So in order to adopt this dog out, she's the perfect dog. I mean, she's house trained, crate trained, leash trained. If you say sit, stay, she sits, stays. If I open that crate door and tell her to wait, she doesn't come out. We go to Tractor Supply. I mean, just today we went to Tractor Supply and there was a blue heeler there, and the lady was really nice to help me kind of socialize Milana. And she just done really good. She turned her back on the dog. She knew I wanted her to avoid that dog. And that's all she could do. She turned around and looked at me and I said, stay. And she laid down flat on her belly and she just looked opposite of the dog. But in order for her to get a good home, I've got to find somebody that can protect her the way I do, because she can go on leash walks. She can be around dogs. Would I want her in a home with a dog? No, I want her to be the special girl in that house, because she's already shared a home with dogs and it didn't work out. Okay. But she could go on. She's allowed to be around dogs because she knows how to act and she listens very good. But she just has to have an experienced adopter and know that she will react if she's put in the corner, because she's not sure what they're going to do to her.
Okay. So when she was first adopted out, did she get along with dogs? Is this more of a case of, you know, families have situations and they bring in more dogs and they don't consider the needs of the current dog? I mean, I've seen it with other rescues. I've seen it with so many families, and it's unfortunate because I actually saw it on a post today from another rescue. A black pug was returned to the rescue because the family got two big dogs. And in the last year, they decided the pug wasn't a good fit for the new dogs and they got rid of the pug. And, you know,
he was there first.
Yes, he was.
Milana, I think Milana was in this home first. And when we adopted her, and the lady chose to adopt a couple more dogs, she brought a couple more dogs in, and
it just didn't work out.
It just didn't work out. And when it didn't work out, you know, she chose to push Milana out because she's the big girl, you know. And I think it's got to do with, if you adopt a dog from me and say Milana, I'm going to support that dog. I mean, if you say, look, I'm having issues, I don't know what to do, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to my trainer. I'm going to examine myself and I'm going to reach out, because we do have trainers that we offer, and they get a discount. Step up, fix the problem in the house, you know, be a responsible adopter, be a responsible pet owner. You just don't throw your dogs out because they don't get along. You don't throw your kids out when they don't get along, you know. So fix the problem, make whoever's not doing right line up, because that's what we do here. And Milana's fitting in great. I mean, she gets time on the couch, you know, everybody's in their own spot. But like the other night, she was laying on the couch and I just kind of looked over at her. She hadn't really showed much playfulness, but I was sitting in the chair and I was like, you ain't gonna come give me no love, girl. And before I knew it, she popped over the arm of the chair, was in my lap, and I was like, really?
Oh.
So now she's, you know, if her owner would have looked at her and said, okay, we're gonna fix this and found the problem, Milana could still be in her home, you know, where she felt safe with her little girl and her mama and her doggy friends. You know, everybody don't always get along, but if you know what the problem is, fix it. Wow. And if you can't fix it, rescues will help you. They will. They're so eager to keep a dog in a home that they will go above and beyond to make sure that that dog either gets training or it gets socialized like it should be, or you, the adopter, learns more about the situation so that you can handle it in a better way. But she's back with us now, and we are looking for her forever home because she's ready. She's just got to have the right person that can love and understand her.
Gotcha. So she loves kids. So what would be the good home? Let's advocate for her on this episode and see if we can, you know, reach far and wide and find that perfect home for her. What would you say would be the ideal place for her?
Well, since she's been here, she spent the night on the cots with the grandkids. She loves them. She'll lay and watch TV with them. So I say the perfect home for her would be a home that is stable, not a lot of high anxiety. kids that that respect dogs, because she's going to go with the flow, but she just needs to know that somebody loves her and that somebody's going to protect her if anything goes wrong. And if she knows that you got her back, she's going to be fine. I was down the road the other day and we were walking and running, and this dog from nowhere come running up to us, you know, and the first thing I wanted to do is, oh my God, you know, here's a dog and I haven't had her around a dog, and this dog's not on leash and I don't know this dog, so Milana may react, you know. But I put her behind my back and I just said, stay, Milana. And then this little dog, he just wanted to play with her, you know, he wanted to do but lick her and love her. And, you know, she was just looking at him like, I don't know you. And I was kind of fearful, but I protected her. It's kind of like those dogs that move when you move. Mm-hmm. What, they got the bell to my eyes and they move around real fast.
Yes, everywhere.
I moved, she would move right there with me. She listened to me. She kept her eyes on me because she knew I had her back and that I wasn't going to let anything harm her. So she never reacted. And I felt in my heart right then, that's the kind of home she needs. She needs to know that her human loves her and is going to protect her. So kids are going to be great. She just got to have the security of knowing you got me and you ain't never going to turn me loose and you're going to love me. And I would suggest that she doesn't have dogs in the home just because of her past history. Not that she couldn't have dogs, because when she left here, she came up to the foster that kept her. She just showed up in the yard and that lady had dogs. She was a foster for me.
Okay.
And Milana lived there for a little while with all the dogs and she didn't have an issue, but there was structure in the home. So okay. I would say structure is a good word for her. As long as you got structure, she's going to do good. But I wouldn't put her in a home with the dogs right now just because her heartbreak from her last home, you know, don't want to put her through it again. She just needs to be the only queen in the house.
Gotcha. Okay. And, you know, that goes, you know, for any and all animals. We all want to give them structure. I've had trainers on the podcast and we always want to give them kind of like we get children, a routine, a schedule. There's also correcting them and teaching them what's right and what's wrong. Dogs are the same way. So I hope that, you know, whoever's listening to this just takes a minute to think about that and realizes, hey, if we did that for our dogs, they'd be much happier dogs, more stable dogs. We'd be much happier too, because then we have obedient dogs and it's just a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of how I see it. Since we adopt dogs out, the best dogs are the ones that have the structure. They have the routine.
So let me ask you this. Why do you keep doing this? I mean, do you ever want to give up or what keeps you going?
Giving up is something that we face a lot when you put your heart into it. Today was a hard day, so it's kind of emotional, but yeah, you want to give up, you know, when everybody else is out, you know, doing their thing and vacationing and you're at home because there's no volunteers and you can't do it. You can't go and not take care of your dog. So you sacrifice your life to help these dogs that people just throw outside the road. So yeah, I want to give up a lot, but when you look at that dog and you help it, like Rosebud and Milana, you know, they've been let down hard. So here I am. If I don't give it to them and I don't help them, they're never going to succeed. So I don't give up because there's just one more that's got to be saved. It's always just one more.
If you had one wish for dog rescue, what would it be?
Volunteers.
Oh, okay.
Fosters and volunteers. If I had one wish, is that everybody would listen to our hearts and realize it ain't something that we enjoy doing. It's something that we have to do to save them, you know.
But wouldn't it be nice if we did it because we enjoyed it and not because we had to? Meaning, wouldn't it be nice if there weren't that many dogs, if this problem didn't actually exist to the level that it does, so that we see it everywhere and everyone's advocating for the same thing? I asked this question in different ways to the different organization volunteers, and they all are desperate in their corner of their own world for volunteers and fosters. What is it that you most need?
In order to save dogs, we mostly need fosters and volunteers to help with the load here. People don't understand. The dogs are not just sitting in the building waiting for an adopter. There's a process, and that process takes from 6 o'clock in the morning for me until I go to work at 10 o'clock. And then I come home for, you know, 2 o'clock and I have to get everybody out. And then, you know, in the process of all this, you're feeding and you're cleaning and you're wiping the bowls and you're shaking the beds and you're washing the sheets. There's a lot of work in there. So if you had people that would come by and just, you know, sweep the building down for you and wipe the kennels down and clean the bowls. That takes 2 hours off of your day if you only have 7 dogs.
Right.
So you take it like right now, I'm at a number of 15, and there's just one of me. To be honest with you, for the last 2 weeks, I haven't even been to work. And I'm blessed to have a job that I can juggle around a little bit. And it's not like pushing right now, but there's so many dogs here in mine right now that I can't even get up and go to work without getting behind on schedules. You know, there's no cooking supper right now. My husband's very understanding. But
yay to the husband. We love understanding husbands.
Yes, but they get tired too.
Oh, I know. Yes. Yes, that is true.
So if we had more volunteers to just come in and do some of the simple things so that the training, you know, you got to spend one-on-one with every dog at least 30 minutes a day, twice a day. That's an hour per dog. And that's not your cleaning of your building and washing your blankets, you know, picking up dog food. And that ain't, you know, then on the side, I've been on the phone for 2 days. We got dogs everywhere, strode out, puppies on the side of the road. We're trying to get them gathered up. So when you don't have volunteers to help you run, do this kind of stuff, then it's only you and it takes up your whole entire day. You know, right. So if you had volunteers and fosters, you could save a whole lot more dogs. Fosters that were dedicated, not when they mess up, send them out the door, you know.
Right. You have to still, if you're going to offer to foster, I mean, follow the protocol or at least
commit.
Be dedicated. Yes, there you go. Commit. Right. So on that note, tell us, where can our listeners find and follow Deep South Canine Rescue?
We have a website and it's deepsouthcaninerescue.org. We also have an Instagram page and a Facebook page, which is Deep South Canine Rescue. So you can come and watch us and join us. And if you need us, contact us right there.
Okay, great. And I will have those live links in the show notes for this episode so anyone can easily scroll down and connect with Pam at Deep South Canine Rescue with one easy click. Our listeners should also know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any organization or individual on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America. Thank you so much for this lovely and very moving chat. I kept myself from getting emotional because I get emotional at everything. You know me. By now, dogs are my heart. They fill my life with so much joy. They've taught me so much, especially the 4 that I've gotten from Deep South Canine Rescue. Those Southern dogs, I tell you, there's something about them. I don't know what it is, but they come out here to Los Angeles and they give me just a piece of that happiness, that joy, and that Southern comfort that I like to call. So thank you so much for everything you do, for supporting me through my own adoption process. You were there for me to teach me when I called you and adopted Huckleberry, and I called you and said, oh my gosh, he barked at my little dogs. I was freaking out. But all I had to do was give him time, allow him to decompress and do the slow introductions. And truly, Huckleberry has been one of the absolute friendliest, most lovable dogs I've ever met in my life. So thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
All right. Have a good day. And I hope that our listeners will reach out to you and let me know if they do.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for having us on The Canine Condition. I hope that this gets the word out to everybody that, you know, if everybody would come together, we could fix this problem.
Absolutely. Thank you. I find that when things are personal to us, we tend to take them more seriously, or are inclined to take action in a given situation. As you have heard in this conversation, here is yet another reputable and wonderful dog rescue organization needing our help. I advocate for each and every organization on the podcast, and we are still a young podcast. I could seriously go on and have hundreds of episodes and still not cover all of the amazing organizations across the country doing this work. So what that tells me is that we have a very big problem in every corner of every state in the United States. I urge you to ponder upon it, to talk about it with friends, with family, with neighbors. If you see something, say something. Let's not keep walking by, ignoring the homeless dogs that roam our streets. Let's not leave it to the next guy to worry about the suffering dog on the street because we're too busy to stop. It's going to take all of us doing something to see a true change in this homeless dog crisis.
please reach out to Deep South Canine Rescue. Check them out on the links in the show notes. I have adopted 4 amazing, lovable dogs from them, and I tell you, there's something so special about those Southern dogs. Thank you for joining me for this episode. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell all your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes. The Canine Condition. Come, sit, stay.